This is the moment that changed Bill Younglove's life. "Sir, yes, sir," we all shouted loudly and in unison as we ran full tilt out of Baltimore's then Friendship Airport. I can only imagine what fellow travelers, civilians, thought as our DI led us to cattle car semis transporting us to Quantico, Virginia. Believe me, friendship and induction into the Marine Corps had nothing to do with each other. I muttered to my seatmate, "Can't believe we just lost our freedom." And so it was for this 19-year-old, with a year of college behind him, as he joined young enlistees from all over to pursue officer training via the Platoon Leaders Class, PLC. Whether it was oppressive heat and humidity, regulated supposedly by a three-flag exercise-allowed system, rising at dawn in the barracks, or daily assemblages on the parade field for inspections, every second was controlled by orders. Even if the Corps Commandant initiated orders, they were carried out by a Quonset Hut drill sergeant, as ordered by our second lieutenant. Just 6 months earlier, fearing being drafted, I had decided to enlist, to keep some choice in just how I would serve my country. Right hand raised, I had intoned the oath of enlistment. "I, William Younglove, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me, according to the regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So help me God." Spoken words by me, almost in rote, in my Michigan hometown, took on much greater, real meaning as time passed. During UCMJ classes that summer, I learned that the Uniform Code of Military Justice superseded, replaced really, my U.S. constitutional rights upheld by U.S. Supreme Court decisions. Violations of the UCMJ were handled by captains' mass and possible court-martials, which might preclude a jury of one's peers. Officers' oaths themselves do not mention the UCMJ. Physically, it was tough. If the weekly Thursday 20-mile-plus hike in full gear, some 35 pounds, and often 100-plus degree heat, 90% humidity, didn't do one in, the mandatory periodic 2-hour fire watch and or 2-hour guard duty during varied nights left one sleek impaired. During instruction, dozing helmets smacked by ever-watchful DIs sent candidates sprawling. Squared away hospital folded racks and footlockers were a given, else contents were strewn about the barracks by inspecting DIs. Same said for uniform maintenance and rifle cleanliness. The latter's failure could mean court-martial. Supervisors' language consisted of yellings inches from enlistees' faces, often racist and sexist slogans, words laced with threats. By the time I got to Parris Island, South Carolina, night marches into nearby swamps, fortunately, had largely been discontinued due to recruit drownings. Interestingly, or ironic, my military discharge came just as Vietnam was erupting, when then-President Johnson increased troop numbers greatly to oppose any possible Viet Cong victory. In the decades following my own brief military experience, I studied the Holocaust and growing genocides. Such studies raise the essential question, why? That is, why have large numbers of military personnel obeyed one or more charismatic leaders in destroying millions of targeted victims? German 1920s civil servants swore an oath to the Weimar Constitution. After President Hindenburg's death in 1934, however, Reich military servants avowed, "I swear I will be true and obedient to the Führer of the German Reich and people, Adolf Hitler, Supreme Commander of the Armed Forces. Observe the law and conscientiously fulfill the duties of my office, so help me God. Translation of Reich Law Gazette 1, August 20, 1934, page 785. What, of course, does swearing such an oath mean? Today, in the United States, federal employees, representatives, senators, judges, political appointees, even the vice president and president swear an oath, Article 6 of the Constitution. Interestingly, though, said oath is to the Constitution, not to any religious test or individual. The President's Oath of Office, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 8 of the U.S. Constitution, is, I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. There are many writers, columnists, analysts today who affirm that official representatives in the U.S., from the president to the lowest ranking soldier, swore an oath pledging loyalty not to any ruler, administration, or party, but to the Constitution itself. Beginning in late 1945, a series of Nuremberg trials judged the guilt or innocence of Reich military and officials who fulfilled Hitler's orders. Befehl ist Befehl, an order is an order, was an often used defense, including by Adolf Eichmann in 1961. Subsequent to World War II, various U.S. military personnel have run afoul of laws that circumscribe carrying out orders. The 1968 Malai Massacre, led by Army Lieutenant William Calley, waterboarding attempts in Vietnam during the same time period, the 2003 Iraq Abu Ghraib torture abuse, among others. What was the case, however, when I served in the Marine Corps? I saw myself as a servant of the people, carrying on democracy in these United States. Orders given, however, could be and often were ambiguous. My experiences taught me that loss of my free will and that control of my behavior could lead me to acts that would be reprehensible to my personal, ethical, and moral values. I did not see that just following orders could ever be a viable defense. Also, there's a matter of representation itself. The Corps made clear from day one, you never, ever contact your elected officials for anything. Communicating with the press, tantamount to whistleblowing, could become a court-martial offense. As I continued to study the Holocaust and genocide, researching, writing, interviewing, teaching, developing materials, and traveling the world, I became convinced that young people need to carefully examine the very words in any military and national oath of allegiance to which they may commit. National defense, absolutely essential to the safety and security of everyone in the U.S., is best carried out by those who understand exactly what they pledge. Since 1980, all male, including transgender, who are born male, U.S. citizens, male immigrants, conscientious objectors, and disabled, ages 18 to 25, must register with the U.S. Government Selective Service as a possible prelude to military service. It is a felony not to register. The American Friends Service Committee's National Youth and Militarism Program lists considerations before signing a military enlistment agreement. In sum, the AFSC advises deciding slowly, including a witness, examining own moral feelings, reading fine print of written enlistment agreement, and realizing the suspension of one's civil liberties. The AFSC provides more details plus updates. Most of us face numerous momentous events during our lifetimes. As U.S. citizens, we are promised much. We may, in turn, promise to serve our country in many different ways. Few decisions will ever control us, however, as do the legal oaths we swear, and just exactly what they mean. For me, enlisting in the military turned out to be the moment that changed my life the most.